You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Heat Nation. You're listening to Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Thank you for subscribing on Apple and Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Himalaya. My name is David O'Mill. Today's episode is brought to you by Built Bar. Built Bar is a protein bar that tastes just like a candy bar. So go to builtbar.com and use the promo code LOCKEDON and you'll get $10 off your first order. Bam Adebayo's defense is getting the recognition it deserves. I'll discuss Jimmy Butler's chances of being a Hall of Fame player, as well as some reports on the friction in the Jazz locker room. But I'll start off with the latest news regarding the bubble forming in Orlando to mark the restart of the NBA season. The Heat are expected to travel to Orlando on Wednesday, so as you're hearing this, the Heat will either be on their way there or already in Orlando. Derrick Jones Jr. has been cleared of the coronavirus. He passed a test. He did not test positively for the coronavirus, and he's expected to join Miami when they travel to Orlando. I don't think he'll be traveling with the team because of the previous exposure to the coronavirus, so he'll be traveling by himself. Players that are traveling by themselves to Orlando have to go through a different process. I believe Derrick, if he's traveling by a private plane or car, he will only have to pass two consecutive tests. If you're traveling by commercial flight, you'll have to pass three because of the increased exposure. We haven't gotten those details yet. It seems like he is going to be traveling to join the team by himself, and he'll have to continue being examined once he's there. But obviously, it seems like that's very good news, not just for the team, but more importantly for Derrick's overall health, that he seems to be doing fine, that it was caught early enough where he's still able to be an impact player. Again, that he's healthy and first and foremost, but that he's there, able to join his teammates in Orlando. He does help with the team's depth and defense. All the players that have spoken recently via Zoom conference calls have talked about the strength of their team's defense, their depth, the fact that you have so many different players that can do so many different things. And so Derrick, while he may be limited in some regards, can certainly contribute, especially from a defensive perspective. So that is very encouraging news, not just for the team, but also more importantly for Derrick himself. As for the other two players that tested positively within the last week, there's been no word whether or not any Heat player will not be traveling to Orlando. So it's not like the team has indicated exactly which players have tested positively, and there's no indication from the team that they're signing anyone else. So I think the expectation is, at the very least, that they hope that those players who did test positively last week will somehow be cleared and will be able to pass any future tests so that they can join their team over the next week or so. Remember, there's still going to be a time period of quarantining once they're there in Orlando. They're not going to be allowed to engage with other teammates or teams. So it's not like they're going to have a lot of contact with the outside world or anything like that. But at the same time, it does seem like Miami is being very, very cautious and also very secretive about which players may or may not have contracted the virus. And so you look at a team like the New Orleans Hornets, they've had something similar where they have not revealed which player has tested positively, but they've also indicated that they're signing somebody else. And Darius Thornwell, I believe, a former teammate of Chris Silva's in South Carolina, has been signed by the Pelicans as a COVID replacement. And so some player on that Pelicans roster has tested positively, and Thornwell is going to be replacing him during the duration of the restart in Orlando. So that's interesting news. Again, I'll keep you posted about anything that breaks with the Heat, but at this time, it looks like the team will probably be fairly close to full strength. There's no way of knowing for certain. Again, no players' names have been released, and I haven't really dug around because it's not important to me, to be 100% honest with you. But what is important is that Bradley Beal will not be playing in Orlando. The team revealed that he had a shoulder strain that would keep him from playing. I call BS. I don't think there was a shoulder strain. I think they kind of recognized that Beal really doesn't have to play, that he's going to be risking injury, that there's no realistic chance of the Wizards making the playoffs or even making any noise in the playoffs if they do somehow lock in the eighth seed. They're currently out of the eight top teams in the Eastern Conference. But the team that's right above them, the Brooklyn Nets, have suffered many losses. Not only are they going to be out with missing DeAndre Jordan. They're going to be missing Kevin Durant. They're going to be missing Kyrie Irving. On top of that, they'll also be missing Spencer Dinwiddie, who tested positively for a second time for the coronavirus, as well as teammate Taurean Prince, who also tested positively. Both players will be held out of the Orlando bubble. Because of the close proximity to the restart date, there's no chances of either of them joining their team there. And again, it's not like the Nets have a lot to play for. You'll probably see a lot more playing time for Tyler Johnson, so that's news for Heat fans to look out for. But as far as what the Nets and the Wizards are able to do, it's not much. I can understand why the Nets want to be held out there. Again, they're not going to make any news there. But as far as Beal is concerned, it's a little peculiar because he's been working out with a team. Scott Brooks and Beal himself have said that they feel great, that he looks sharp and everything else, and all of a sudden there is some very mysterious shoulder strain that's cropped up there that's keeping Beal out of playing. I know there's some conspiracy theorists out there saying already that this is Beal setting himself up for a trade. He doesn't want to hurt his trade value or things of that sort. I don't believe that either. I think he's still traveling with a team, though. And if you checked out the most recent episode of Locked On NBA that I recorded with Wes Goldberg, we kind of talked about the fact that he's going to be there. And at first, I hadn't really considered the possibility that players like Oladipo, who I talked about in my most recent episode, or Bradley Beal, will be traveling with his team for any other reason than just sharing the camaraderie of playing alongside or watching their teammates play in the Orlando bubble. But the reality is that they're going to be in this very confined space. It's going to be very much a recruiting opportunity for other teams. And so I wouldn't be surprised if Beal gets a chance to be wooed by Heat teammates or things of that sort. So it's going to be interesting to see what may in fact turn out. We'll find out in the next couple months or years or something along those lines. Look, I mean, the Heat Big Three formed in 2008, if you believe reports that they were, obviously they were teammates on the USA Olympic team, and then they formed a friendship there. They talked at least there about the possibility of forming together, and they did get that opportunity in 2010. So, I mean, this is a possibility for guys like Oladipo and Beal to kind of be, talking to other guys from other teams and kind of see, well, maybe I can form a friendship here. DeAndre Jordan and Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving formed a friendship when they were with the Olympic team a couple of years ago as well. So it seems like that happens a lot. And while you're going to be in Orlando without a lot of things to do, you're going to be able to eventually join other players from other teams as far as play cards, dominoes, whatever games, Xbox, stuff like that. And at the same time, I guess you'll just form friendships and see what happens. So, it'll be interesting to see whether or not Heat players want to fraternize with a guy like Beal and Oladipo and see if they can try to woo them to their team. But that's a whole conversation for another time. As far as the actual play that's going on there, without Beal, the Wizards do play the Pacers, the Indiana Pacers, who are the fifth seed currently, tied with the Philadelphia 76ers, and they also play the Boston Celtics, who Miami is trying to climb past for the third seed in the Eastern Conference. The Nets play the Celtics and the Orlando Magic twice. The Magic are currently the seventh seed there, so they have a chance, I guess, to piggyback or kind of pole vault into the sixth seed, so that should be interesting there. There's a lot of different scenarios there. No way of knowing what's going to happen because, as I explained to a listener recently who sent me an email, a lot of this can change every day. So we're kind of playing it by ear and trying to break news as it happens and formulate and guess what could happen. But a lot of that could change within a few hours. So in additional news, an Orlando Magic player has tested positive. The team was the first to enter the bubble for obvious reasons. They just had to take a bus and basically go 45 minutes away from their facility to reach the Walt Disney World campus. But they did so without that player, so the Orlando bubble has not been compromised. And that name of the player has not been released by team president of basketball operations, Jeff Weltman. And so when you look at what's going on already, we're starting to see more and more positive tests. I think that's just the reality. I talked about this recently, and I'll continue to bang this drum about it because I think we're going to see a lot of players test positively over the course of the Orlando restart. Every team is going to suffer probably at least one player that will contract the virus there. This is not an actual bubble with Disney World cast members coming in and out, maids, cooking staff, cleaning staff, concierge. I mean, everybody that's going to be there in a typical hotel is going to have access to the quote-unquote outside world, and so they're going to be at risk for contracting the virus, and they're going to be at risk to bring it inside the Orlando bubble. So there is no way of limiting that, and as much as it might be a safe haven, it may be even a safer haven for NBA players, it's not going to be foolproof. It's not entirely a bubble, and so it's just about trying to avoid it as much as possible. But for now, it looks like the Heat are going to be able to stay very close to 100% health. Hopefully, if those two players who did contract it or did test positively within a recent week will be able to join the team at some point soon. If we have more information, I'll relay that as soon as possible. But looking ahead, does the Heat have any player on their current roster that might wind up in the Hall of Fame? I'll take a look in the next segment. You're listening to Locked On Heat. Look, I've talked to you about Rock Auto before. Everybody likes to save money, and rockauto.com is a great place to do it. If you have any car parts that you need to be replacing, if you want to be able to do it yourself, if you feel like you're handy enough to make that job a reality, it's a great way to save a ton of money, something I've done in the past. You go to rockauto.com, you'll find all the parts you're looking for very easily. Their website, which they've been using for 20 years. This is a website that's been in existence for 20 years serving their customers. You go, you look through what you need, you find your parts, you see the right price for you. You order it within days, you've got it, and it saves you time, saves you a ton of money, and it's just a great way of again, saving that kind of money that you need and using it for things that might come up, like your mortgage, your rent, or anything that you might need. So go to rockauto.com, navigate easily through their catalog of car parts for your truck or car. You choose the brands you want, the specifications, the prices that you want to pay, and you get it. It's always reliably low priced. And right now, if you go to rockauto.com, you go to the How Did You Hear About Us section and enter Locked On so they know we sent you. You see all the parts available for your car or truck. It's an amazing selection, reliably low prices, and all the parts you will ever need. That's rockauto.com. Listen to, subscribe, and leave a review whenever possible on your favorite app to listen to podcasts, and that you always get the latest episode by asking your smart device to play Locked On Heat when you get in your car to get your team every day. The Bleacher Report recently posted a story predicting which players on current rosters would be enshrined in the James Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame. And perhaps not surprisingly, the Miami Heat had zero locks to make the Hall. Jimmy Butler has the best chance by far, nearly 43%, according to basketballreference.com, a statistic that they reference in the Bleacher Report. This was the exact description of Jimmy's chances there. Butler's career got off to a slow start as he didn't become a full-time starter until his third season with the Chicago Bulls. Despite this, the 30-year-old has now become one of the better two-way wings in the league with 5 All-Star games and 4 All-Defensive teams to his name. As long as his current production as Miami's number one option holds up for a few more years, Butler will be in the Hall of Fame. Andre Iguodala has very little chance. He was on the bubble along with Jimmy there, but his chances are far lower, just about 6%, despite Andre being a one-time All-Star, also making the All-Defensive team a couple times, being an Olympian, a gold medalist, and of course, being a 3-time champion with the Golden State Warriors, in addition to a Finals MVP. Bam Adebayo is a rising star, at least that was the description that was given to him by the Bleacher piece there. And of course, it's way too early as far as determining his chances of making the Hall, considering it's just his third overall season. But looking at Jimmy's overall chances there, I'm a little surprised that it was such a lukewarm take there about Jimmy. I don't know where to stand on it 100%. I could make an argument in both ways, that Jimmy does deserve to be in the Hall of Fame at some point and that he does not. There is no exact science to predicting Hall of Fame players. There are some players in the Hall of Fame that many consider are not worthy selections there. You got a guy like Mitch Richmond, who was a very, very low-rung role player with the Los Angeles Lakers and won a championship in that regard, but he had been a all-star, one of the great scorers in the league during the 90s, but never really achieved much team success and still was enshrined in the Hall of Fame. I think it was somewhat deserved. I really loved Richmond as a player, and so I feel like he was a very, very good player that just got the recognition he needed and just happened to play for very bad teams during most of his career. Jimmy, not quite the same thing. Again, he was a growing role player. He didn't really produce a lot alongside, you know, guys like Derrick Rose and Joakim Noah, Luol Deng for part of his career, etc. This was a team that was going through many changes earlier on in Jimmy's career, and of course he worked himself up to being a key role player and then a key starter, and then also obviously, as they mentioned in the piece, a great two-wing player, two-way player. But you know, he's also a gold medalist. He has won, you know, the Olympics with the USA basketball team a couple of years ago, and he's been in the All-Star game a number of times. You know, I could see a case for him being on there, but sometimes it's kind of hard to tell if he's had enough production there. And I think my concern mostly about Jimmy's chances have to do with that last sentence of the assessment on the Bleacher Report piece, which is that if he holds up this kind of production, meaning 20 points per game, 6 rebounds, and 6 assists per game, that he'll absolutely be a Hall of Fame player for a few more years. I don't think there's any guarantee of that. Like, I mean, this is, first of all, not only is age always a consideration and an unfortunate one as far as whether or not he's going to be at 100% or close to it over the next couple of years, especially considering what we've seen this season and the restart and everything else. I mean, God forbid any kind of risk of injury or anything like that, but even if just things progress at a normal level, there's a good chance that age is going to impact his overall production, not to mention the fact that this is going to be a team that's going to change one way or the other. Either you're going to see Bam continuing to ascend in his role as a scorer and contributor. You know, Bam's already said he wants to average about 22 points per game next year and be an MVP candidate. But you're also looking at the possibility of signing either a Bradley Beal or a Victor Oladipo or a Giannis Antetokounmpo, who are going to eclipse that, you know, points per game average by a wide margin. And if that's the case, there's no way Jimmy's going to be putting out 20 points per game. Something's going to give there. And you know, you have to look at the big three and kind of look at what Chris Bosh had to do as far as being the player who was most willing to give up his production. I don't know if that's going to be Jimmy. It seems like it's the natural fit for Bam to kind of take a backseat as a scorer, considering that's not nearly the strength of his game just yet. So I don't know. There's no way of really assessing whether or not Jimmy's going to be able to continue producing at this high level. But even if he does not, rather, can he still make the Hall of Fame? I think he can. I think he's done enough just yet. You'd like to see a title in there at the very least to kind of lock things in. 43%, not great odds. So has to probably at least put up similar production for at least another year if he's able to get a title or an All-Star nod. It's kind of hard to exclude a 6-time All-Star. And again, a guy who's put up the kind of points he has, it should be enough. I don't know. Maybe at least a deep playoff run. Maybe at least a trip to the finals. Even if a title isn't a realistic one. If Miami's able to add an Antetokounmpo or a Beal and they continue to, you know, build this team and into a title contender and they make at least one or two trips to the finals, I think Jimmy's a lock, regardless of his production. I mean, you can see that with Chris Bosh, who should have been a first-time selection there when he was eligible to be added to the Hall of Fame. Anyway, this is probably gone on too much about a topic here that's very difficult to get into. As far as Iguodala is concerned, it's interesting that he's not considered a lock, considering, you know, team success that he's been able to achieve. It just goes into the conversation as far as what they value, whether that's a team role or individual production or some kind of weird combination that only certain people can predict as far as being good enough. Like, you look at Chris's chances of making the Hall of Fame. Not only was he a hell of an individual player for 8 seasons before he joined the Heat, he was a great player here too, putting up great production, great numbers, and then he just kind of took a back seat and won 2 championships, as well as being a 4-time, well, 4-time, 5-time All-Star while he was here in Miami. I mean, geez, I think he's accomplished more than enough, and somehow he's being shrubbed there. And I also kind of wanted to look at what Bam would need to do in order to make it. Right now, obviously, way too early. So he'd have to continue trending the same way he has this past season. If he's able to become an MVP candidate with the next year or two, the way he predicts or the way he's already said he wants to, then obviously I think he starts improving his chances considerably. Will he need to be more of a productive player offensively? I think that's important. You know, it's, again, difficult to look at whether or not it's individual recognition and awards. He'd still have to achieve a couple of those, whether it's all defensive teams, whether or not it's a most improved player, all-star nods, things of that sort. A couple all NBA team selections, I think, are important. And you probably at least need to win a title in order to lock that in. You look at a player like Ben Wallace, who was a great defensive player. I think he's an interesting candidate there. Not necessarily a Hall of Fame type player, but a guy who won a championship. Maybe he's not the best scenario, but even Paul Millsap's probably not a likely Hall of Fame candidate, considering he's been a multi-time All-Star and All-NBA team selection, put up some pretty good numbers, had some success individually there. Then you look at a guy like Sean Kemp, who also put up a lot of numbers, went to the finals with the Seattle Supersonics, and kind of petered out as far as his career was concerned, but had great production and somehow was not an NBA, a Hall of Fame selection. So the criteria is never quite clear. But Bam, certainly on the right path. He just needs to do a little bit more, particularly offensively, and to get the kind of recognition he deserves. But even if he doesn't make the Hall of Fame, coaches around the league value Bam Adebayo's defense. I'll explain the next segment. You're listening to Locked On Heat. Reminder that you can always reach me online at Locked On Heat or using the hashtag AskLOHeat. ESPN's Kevin Pelton had a very good piece on the Utah Jazz detailing the continuing friction that existed well before the positive test for COVID-19 by Rudy Gobert and teammate Donovan Mitchell. The two All-Stars had a somewhat contentious relationship over the years there, and Pelton did a fantastic job of kind of getting into the details of what this is. Some of the, not necessarily allegations, but some of the things that Pelton wrote about were that, Gobert kind of sees himself still as the gangly kid who grew up in France, that his personal journey to the NBA is a little different than Mitchell's, that because he was there for a little longer before Mitchell, that he had to earn his place by coming up to the G League and kind of becoming a key role player and continuing to build something with Gordon Hayward when he was the team. And then, Mitchell's come in and all of a sudden kind of set the team on fire and become an All-Star very, very quickly, being very productive and kind of getting the media recognition that Gobert has only just started to get, and to a much lesser degree. So there's a lot of issues there between the two players. Both players and teammates around them think it's salvageable. It's kind of sexy, I think, is a word to kind of look at the friction there and make a big deal about. Pelton does a really good job of, again, highlighting all the different issues at play here. I don't know that it's necessarily salvageable. Despite what the players say, and both Mitchell and the piece comes across, from my perspective anyway, as Gobert kind of working with Pelton to tell his side of the story, saying, his quote, "I'm kind of an asshole. I can understand why Mitchell is pissed off," and things of this sort. I think the fact that Donovan tested positively for COVID at the beginning, right after the NBA hiatus took place, when everybody was most scared, and rightly so. I think we're not scared enough nowadays, but that's a whole other conversation. As for Mitchell, he was particularly concerned that, he did test positively, even though he wound up being asymptomatic and, of course, has luckily stayed that way. But Gobert kind of being somewhat careless and touching, not somewhat, he was totally careless in touching microphones and players' things, teammates' things, and possibly passing along the virus that way. I can understand why Mitchell had some issues there, but from the piece that Pelton wrote, it seems like that disagreement had been in place for some time there. He highlights one particular game where Gobert had a great game, hell of a stat line, and then Mitchell kind of comes up behind him, kind of messes around as he's doing a post-game interview, and Gobert says, "Hey, pass the damn ball." These are the kind of comments that are, and Mitchell laughed it off at the time, but these are the kind of comments that are like, I'm making these comments jokingly, quote unquote, but not quite jokingly. I'm telling you, pass me the fucking ball. And I think this is interesting as far as how teammates get along and why it's so hard to predict whether or not teammates will get along. They have such really disparate backgrounds. Not only was Gobert growing up as a nerd, a tall, gangly nerd in France that kind of wound up growing into his physique and becoming a hell of a player, but Mitchell, conversely, was the son of a Yankees executive, I believe, and kind of flashy superstar athlete, wound up being heavily recruited to Louisville. Baseball was his first choice, but, he grew up very differently than Rudy did, and so their personalities are very different, and I think you've got a team full of different personalities there. Whether look at Miami's, where a guy like Jimmy and his journey to coming here, a guy like Bam, who has all that talent in the world and kind of takes the foot off the gas when it comes to, putting up big numbers, but still continues to be a very impactful player in many other ways. You got a guy like Myers, who grew up poor in Virginia and had to earn everything. All these different personalities, man. Like, it's just so hard to coexist as a team when you think about the kind of time that they spent together and the expectations for them to thrive, to grow together, to bond. It's why I've always said that fit and understanding your role as a member of a team is the number one determining factor in success at both the individual and team level. Like, you have to understand what your role is on the team. And I think for Gobert and Mitchell, it's very difficult for them to understand what they should be doing. Like, Gobert, a very good player, more of a role player just because of his limitations offensively. And while, Mitchell is much more flashy and can be much more adept as a ball handler and shot creator, he's not necessarily going to give up the ball as much as he should. Could Mitchell, it's probably a combination of both. Like, Gobert is probably being ridiculous in his expectations for himself and for his recognition and the recognition that fans should have of his game. But Mitchell could probably do a little bit more as a young player to try and get Gobert going. And I think that's realistic. I think, even when I talked to Joe Ingles about it, he kind of made a little joke there. Now, Ingles is a very hilarious, sarcastic guy, and he made a joke to me that Mitchell looked him off a couple of times and didn't pass him the ball, and that he was pissed off at the rookie. This was during Mitchell's rookie season when I wrote a preview, a feature on Donovan Mitchell, and it was kind of hilarious at the time. But you see this story now from Gobert, and I think the reality is that Mitchell could be kind of a ball hog, and he just needs to understand his fit a little bit better, which is why Miami kind of works so well. One of the fantastic statements that I've heard from Jimmy Butler when he was on the JJ Redick podcast a few months ago, it seems like an eternity now, was that his understanding of role players and his role on a team is that every player should understand what their role is and work to the best of their ability to achieve that role and maximize it. Not everybody can have the same role there. It's so impossible. It's why even a great like Dwayne Wade has to take a sort of back seat to LeBron James in the second year of the Big Three experiment, because Dwayne had been such a great player both on the offensive and defensive end for 7 years prior to that. He had been the star. He'd been the guy who ran the offense, who did so much for this team. But we've seen, by and large, that LeBron likes that kind of control, and it's difficult for him to thrive without it. And so Dwayne had to make a change, and that's a very, very difficult process, not just from a on-ball perspective, but also off the ball, like the kind of emotional, psychological toll that takes as alpha players, guys that have been used to, again, being the star, the driving force behind their team since they were kids, to understand, well, now all of a sudden I'm like a fifth, sixth best option. That's very difficult to do. And so it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out in Utah. I've said it before, I don't think Gobert would necessarily be a great fit here, although I love his defense and I love his presence. And it would take, you would be losing a lot on offense. Part of why Myers works so great as a starting center alongside Bam Adebayo is that he can stretch the floor so well. And so I think it's a good fit there. But speaking of Bam Adebayo, The Athletic ran a recent coaches poll on NBA all-defensive teams, and Adebayo was selected on the all-defense second team, and he also earned some second and third place votes, for the defensive player of the year. Gobert was the first teamer there. He is an excellent defender. This isn't just, I remember the argument for years of Whiteside trying to prove that he was a better center than Rudy, and it's just a ridiculous argument. Put up a lot of points that wound up being, a lot of stats that were mostly empty calories. Gobert is a very good defender. I can't take that away from him. Something that was included in the piece here, and this was the kind of description as far as Adebayo and why he was selected. He's enjoying a breakout season for the Heat, and it may also have benefited from Joel Embiid's injury issues this season to get onto the second team. So the theory here is that Embiid might have supplanted Adebayo as a second team All-NBA defender, but the piece continues. Adebayo also picked up second and third place votes in the Defensive Player of the Year conversation, a sign that he is coming into his own as one of the most respected defenders in the league. In a year or two, this is a quote, he's going to be at the top of this list, one coach said. So that was interesting. I find that we're starting to get more and more recognition. There was another accompanying story that ran somewhere. I can't recall exactly where, but apparently the odds for Bam Adebayo winning most improved players, according to Vegas anyway, have improved dramatically. And he seems now like he's a lock to win that award again. Another great individual recognition there. It's funny how there seems to be more buzz about Bam, despite the fact that he has not played in 3.5 months. Maybe the lasting impact that he made as far as his overall game was the incredible production he had against the Washington Wizards, where he dominated the fourth quarter there and helped seal a win over a bad Wizards team nonetheless, but still great production. And so it's just interesting how, you know, he's continuing to get the kind of recognition. And I think it's well-deserved. I mean, I love Adebayo's defense. He doesn't put up big numbers necessarily, but he does so much. He's such a versatile, switchy defender. He's just a fantastic overall player. And we're lucky to have him on this team. I'm lucky to cover him. I'm lucky to talk to him on a regular basis because he is a very interesting character on and off the court. And he's just a great find here. I don't think anybody, other than Bam himself, would have predicted that he would have this kind of impact. We've heard the stories now. He's obviously gotten a lot of attention from national writers, but he's just been a fantastic find. You have to give the Heat front office credit for having the vision to select a player like this, even after, you know, they wound up re-signing Hassan Whiteside, even after they added Kelly Olynyk a few weeks later after the draft, and still Bam Adebayo, it could be a future cornerstone for this franchise. So coming up later this week, make sure to check out a crossover episode with the host of Locked On Cavs, where I break down the 10-year anniversary of the decision. That episode should hopefully be already out, so make sure you check that episode out. I'll continue providing the latest news and notes as Miami prepares for the restart of the NBA season. Be sure to subscribe and follow this podcast right now on your favorite podcast app, and you'll get the latest episode of Locked On Heat as soon as it's out. I'm David Ramil signing off and thanking you as always for your support.
Wrap it up, B.